Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To win in geopolitics, you need good strategy and ample material assets to back up that strategy. This is how Russia is conducting itself when it comes to the Ukraine conflict. The Europeans prefer megaphone diplomacy. They're acting more like spoilers than constructive players. This will not bring peace. Crosstalking megaphone diplomacy, I'm joined by my guest, Pierre-Emmanuel Thoman in Paris. He is a lecturer at Lyon University. And in Stockholm, we cross to Mats Nielsen. He is a senior analyst at Dissident Club. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mats, let me go to you first in Stockholm. Referencing my introduction, a good geopolitical strategy is to have assets to back it up. You can achieve success. What are the assets the Europeans have, and what is their strategy other than being obstructionist and throwing every single black pill they can think of? What's the strategy?
The strategy is that they are lacking a strategy, and that often shows by a certain amount of desperation. Europe well knows that Russia retains significant conventional forces on the ground and controls large swaths of territory, which gives it leverage. And they're still somehow hoping that a sustained attrition or logistical challenges and the sanctions will have eroded this advantage. Sadly, it's not really in line with reality. So I would say that the political calculus is more or less a game of chicken. Europe knows that it's lost unless it can get those Russian assets freed. So they're betting everything on this capability. Unfortunately, I don't think it's something that they will be successful with.
Well, Mats, if I can stay with you here, so let me see if I understand this correctly. They're hoping that through theft, they can keep this proxy war going on. They don't want to spend their own money. Oh, that's right. They don't have any of their own money. So it's theft is the only way forward. The consequences of that for Europe are almost hard to fathom moving forward. But they're willing to take the risk, even their reputational risk, Mats?
If we can speak of a reputation that they still have, I mean, the EU often appears fragmented in public debates, and it is fragmented. However, now this is interesting, and from a historical perspective as well, the institutions of Europe, by that I mean the Commission, the Council, and the Parliament, have collectively approved this policy, which means that they are very much, in a collective sense, in cohesion. So this institutional cohesion provides a degree of credibility, even if individual leaders are trying to voice dissenting views, which is much needed. So I would say that the citizens, and especially even nations within the EU, have been kidnapped and are held under the power of the institutions. And this is very, very dangerous, because within an institution, there is no way for any citizen or voter to claim any sort of credit effect. You can't hold anyone responsible for these actions. So Europe, no one is listening to Europe, but Europe is perceived as being strong, unfortunately, due to its strong institutions.
Well, Mats, I'm sorry. It seems to me you just described the Soviet Union, okay, where it's all top down. Okay, that may be a topic for another program. Okay,
it's another program, but there are scary comparisons these days, unfortunately.
Yeah, it seems like it. Pierre-Emmanuel in Paris, over the last news cycle or so, we've had the Americans talking with the Ukrainians talking with the Europeans, and they seem intent. And if we look back at the 28, the original 28-point plan, it seems to me what they want to delete is what is most important, and that is the dealing with the root causes of this conflict here. And that includes NATO membership for Ukraine, recognition of the territorial changes on the ground, also the protection of minorities in Ukraine. Not so much the economic parts of it. I think it's all fluff. I don't think it's really quite meaningful. But Russia wanted that. And I think that a lot of this watching this story over the last week, particularly, that, wow, finally there's an American recognition of Russia's security demands. That was good. And now the Europeans are doing everything in their power, and maybe Secretary of State Marco Rubio are trying to delete or water down the most important parts of that plan. Go ahead, Pierre-Emmanuel.
Well, I think the Europeans know perfectly that if they would like to try to amend the American plan, is going to be out of question for Russia to negotiate on this basis. But their objective is different. The American plan already is going to be very difficult to negotiate, because although there is a beginning and a start of inclusion of some Russians' demands on a systemic basis, like the enlargement of NATO, the recognition of new borders, which actually are of systemic nature, because it can lead to a change of the geopolitical configuration of a spatial system. And already this plan is difficult because there are a lot of traps also from the American side for the future, like the ceasefire. Russia should recognize first the memorandum, then approve the retreat of different Russian and Ukrainian forces from the different territories designated, and then accept a ceasefire, even with before to negotiate, you know, the question of NATO enlargement. So I think this is a non-starter. But this plan is going to the right direction. The Europeans know perfectly it's going totally against what they expected. They try to torpedo the plan because actually this is the question of internal struggle for power within EU. The French, the German are competitors. The French wants to take the lead in military terms in EU. The Germans would like to be the first military power in EU outside Europe. UK also would like not to be put aside by these geopolitical games. So actually, they need to continue the conflict to resolve this dispute within EU. And also the ideologues of European integration needs an enemy, a common enemy, to push for European integration against the will of a different nations. So it's a very difficult situation. And the Europeans actually are only positioning themselves to subcontract Washington geopolitical priorities. And also Washington, we don't know yet, but they play also a sort of double game, because by accepting some European amendments, they know it's not going to work. But if Europeans want to continue their war, a hybrid war against Russia, the Americans will say, okay, we sell you weapons, we give you gas and energy.
Yeah, but Pierre-Emmanuel, I have one. I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but let me throw it back to Mats here. How does this help Ukraine? You guys are talking about the machinations within the EU, maybe within NATO, the Americans and the Europeans. None of you really have talked about Ukraine. Go ahead, Mats.
Well, that's because the country in question in these, dare I say, global imperialist conflicts are often forgotten. I mean, one can make a comparison to Vietnam. It was quite clear that America realized already back in 1965 or 66 that the war in Vietnam was, for all intents and purposes, lost. However, the peace process dragged out for another 6 to 7 years before they finally sat down in Paris, and thereby destroying even more of Vietnam. There is no real care about Ukraine. Ukraine is the sacrificial pawn in a bigger game. So these so-called peace negotiations, which are more kind of a quick fix peace deal that won't happen, is just something to prolong the suffering within Ukraine. So that they can keep the war going. It's not about achieving peace. If they had been adamant and truthful in their will to commit to peace, they would have allowed for the United Nations to call for a peace summit, be it in any country, along the lines of those classical peace summits. And by that I mean that all the parties involved gather at this mountaintop resort and they sit down and they stay there until they have hammered out a peace deal. But this is not what's happening. What's happening is kind of a game of musical chairs in a dark room on a sinking ship. No one really knows what the other one is doing. There are different demands every second day. And it's quite obvious to anyone with basic historical knowledge of how real peace processes are done, this is nothing of the kind. And Ukraine is sadly, sadly forgotten about, because there is no real interest from the European Union about the future
of
Ukraine.
Well, and Mats, I think we have to point out also is Zelensky and his circle are not interested in this as well, is because they, in my personal opinion, the way I look at it, is they just want that money to keep flowing in as long as possible. They want to be able to cash that last check. And if there's a possibility of three more months of it, why not? Okay. I mean, we've only learned just the tip of the corruption that is happening in Ukraine, which I've reported on this program since the start of the special military operation. Finally, it's on the front pages of Western media. Really amazing. And even before the conflict, Western media warned how corrupt Ukraine was. It's amazing how they create these rabbit holes of information and knowledge, and then it suddenly comes back. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt myself. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on megaphone diplomacy. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing megaphone diplomacy. Okay, let's go back to Pierre-Emmanuel in Paris. Pierre-Emmanuel, you know, all of this megaphone diplomacy, all of this white noise, all of these false reports, you know, the plan is 19. No, it's 21 points, and there's 28 points. This is all done intentionally, I believe, to confuse people and misdirect, okay? And as far as I know, as we speak right now, there has been no official document presented to the Americans. So we've been through a week of this here. Of course, there are people in the Kremlin that are responding to media reports, but they're not responding to an official document that has been presented to them from the Trump administration. Now, obviously, considering what we've already said on this program, we see attempts by the Europeans and the Ukrainians to scuttle all of this. There's no surprise in that. But Pierre-Emmanuel, at a certain point, the Russians will just say, we don't have a partner to deal with. I mean, I think it's misunderstood in the West that the Russians will say, yeah, we're kind of interested in some of these points here, not all of them. We have our input. But at the end of the day, maybe there's nothing here to negotiate, and the conflict continues. That is a most likely outcome at this point. Go ahead, Pierre-Emmanuel.
Exactly. As long as the basic demands from Russia, which were presented not only during the conflict from 22 to today, but also in December 29. This is a new European security architecture with removing the infrastructure of NATO, endangering Russian security at its border. And the West refused to negotiate this European security architecture, and is what this conflict is all about. And as long as a new plan, the two previous ones from Mr. Kellogg were totally out of geopolitical reality, this one starts only to take into account some interesting priorities like NATO, like the borders, but it's still not perfect. The Russians would like to negotiate on this basis, but the European alternative plan is completely out of geopolitical reality and is only negotiated to torpedo the plan. And actually, what I think is that the most credible scenario is going to be the conflict will continue on the ground, and Russia will achieve its objectives through the military operation, unfortunately. Because from the West, certain side, they know they lost the war. And actually, it's going to be a blame game.
That's been going on for a long time here. I don't know what genius decided to throw in Russia will return to G8. I mean, I almost fell out of my chair laughing there. Russia doesn't want to be part of that organization. Mats, is that considered a carrot? Oh, my goodness, the Russians will be allowed back in the club. I mean, this is juvenile thinking here. I mean, what person came up with that, Mats?
I think it's just a basic problem with Western decision makers not understanding a Russian mindset. Now, having lived a few years in Russia and having studied the Russian culture, you quickly understand that this is a non-starter. Russia no longer has any interests in these organizations. Yes, Russia still feels a fraternal bond to Europe, but it's for all the realpolitik that's now available, the Russians also realize that they have to turn towards their Eurasian neighbors if they want to gain security. Europe is not to be trusted. So I think the minimal acceptable outcomes still in a Russian perspective are the four pillars of the Russian war policy: demilitarization, denazification, neutrality, and territorial secession of all regions claimed by Russia. And that's it. And unless Russia is offered this in any way, shape, or form, they will continue slowly moving forward across the Ukrainian territories, unfortunately, because this could end now if there had been a willingness to. But there is no profit in peace. So therefore, the profit barons want to continue war because that's so much more profitable.
You know, it's interesting, Pierre-Emmanuel, and you look at the rhetoric that's coming out of European capitals and this ridiculous character, Kaya Kallas. I mean, is that the best Europe can do? It's just, you know, shameful on their part. But I mean, Mats has really been hovering around the most important point here, is that the West likes to moralize about all of these. They moralize the predicament of Ukraine. Well, Ukraine volunteered for this, okay? And there will be a reckoning in Ukraine one day about those that joined this, that wanted to participate in this. They could have opted out. We all know in the first weeks of the special military operation, Boris Johnson arrived. No, you guys are going to stick it out. Well, one day there will be a reckoning for that decision here, and hopefully Zelensky and his circle will pay a high price for it because so much suffering has occurred in Ukraine. But this moralizing doesn't touch upon what Mats has been saying the whole time here, is security. Von der Leyen wants to talk about the children. Well, if we talk about security, security for all, the indivisibility of security, this has been talked about, the whole Helsinki process. I mean, this is not that long ago. These are ideas that are not new. They just need to be applied again. So moralizing this conflict isn't going to end it. Dealing with geopolitics and security will. Pierre-Emmanuel.
Yes, actually, member states of European Union and European members of NATO, they lost the ability to think in geopolitical terms, yes, because they are subcontracting,
yes,
American geopolitics by only positioning themselves against Russia and playing this game of encircling Russia with the backing of the United States. The problem is today that with Donald Trump is not going to work that way anymore, because Donald Trump realized that it's not going to work and he would like to stop this conflict, put the Europeans, continue the subcontracting of geopolitics, but not to lead to a frontal war with Russia. And the Europeans, they promised so much to the European leaders, to their own nations, to their citizens, that Ukraine is going to win, that the EU is going to be prevail. They are ashamed and they try to escape the shame of this. They try to escape the fact they don't have any strategic thinking. And as I said before, it's going to be a blame game between Europeans themselves and in Washington on the Europeans and Kiev. And in addition to this, there are also different interest according to the different states. The military-industrial complex in France doesn't want Germany to take over the militarization of EU. They want to take the lead. There is a lot of money to make.
Yep.
And everything as detrimental.
Both of you are Europeans. I mean, who in Europe wants to see Germany remilitarized? I mean, really. There are people that are still alive that remember that conflict in the middle of the last century. Mats, another issue here, and maybe there's not enough time to talk about it here, but I'd like to mention this theory or belief that who's on the right side of history. That doesn't help us to understand the geopolitics of this crisis. We're on the right side of it. What does that even mean? Go ahead, Mats.
There is no real right side in history when it comes to these kind of geopolitical struggles. I mean, just for example, when the Soviet Union invaded Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary during the Cold War, NATO, they didn't go to these arguments about saving Hungarian children. They looked at it from a very cold geostrategic position. The Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union were too strong. It was better to negotiate security within those borders. NATO and the EU of today need to remember those times, and they need to tell Russia, okay, we need to negotiate out of your feeling for security and geostrategic borders in the future, so we can rebuild relations behind borders where both of us feel secure. But unfortunately, you're falling to the Kaja Kallas arguments about being right or wrong, or being on a moral high ground or a moral low ground. It's not about that. It's about saving Ukrainian and Russian lives by getting down to serious peace negotiations.
You know, Pierre Emmanuel, I mean, if it's all about being on the right side of history and moralizing it, then why didn't the European Union intervene more in Gaza? I mean, are you moral on even days of the week and immoral on odd days of the week? It doesn't seem to make any sense to me. 1 minute, my friend, go ahead.
Yes, it's the typical double standards. Actually, the Europeans are totally divided on the Middle East issues. They compete for influence, actually, but they lost totally influence regarding Israel, for example. Germany considers it's the basic interest of Germany are Israel interest. France instead would like to counterbalance the German power in EU and its Israel positioning. So there is no chance they can get a sort of common position. And in Ukraine, although they claim to be united, it's also a fierce competition behind regarding the end of this conflict and about European Union leadership. And some member states actually wants to take a revanche against Russia.
The goal has always been a strategic defeat of Russia on the part of the West. Gentlemen, it looks like to me we have the ingredients for a strategic defeat and maybe even breakup of the EU, all because they want to be on the right side of history. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Paris and in Stockholm. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.